Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we are back. I heard you missed us. We're back and we brought our pencils. So we're here, we're rolling. We got a new look this week. We're trying new things. Ed likes to try new things, don't you, Ed?
Of course I do.
So let's get right into it. We got an email we've been sitting on for a couple weeks. We're ready to
We've let it marinate.
Well, we've been letting it simmer. Dennis is on the show this week too. He's got some stuff to get off his chest about the fandom. We'll get to that. So beforehand, hit us up, Ed.
Well, first and foremost, the email is brought to you by Goon Guard, goonguard.com. Check them out. Great mouthpiece. All right. Well, first and foremost, we love to have creative emails. And this is from Paul from Oswego, New York.
Fuck you, Paul.
Fuck you, Paul.
I mean, you know, wow. I mean, it's very abrupt, and it kind of is very succinct and to the point.
Read it slow, podcast sucks. Read it slow.
All right, so the title of the email is "Your Podcast Sucks." So, I mean, so we're gonna just get started right here. So, what an absolute dog shit podcast. This is the perfect example of guys living in their mother's basements, a bunch of New England homers who couldn't get laid in a whorehouse with $1,000 bills on them. You need a better host, and a crew needs a sugar bus to get around. Fuck you guys. All from Oswego, New York. Well, I mean,
wow.
I mean, like, first and foremost, I mean, Paul, I'd like to thank you for the email. I'm going to kick it to these guys.
Well, let's start with the voice of reason. Let's start with the professor. Thomas, everybody's going to listen to you, so you want to take this one first?
First of all, Paul needs a hug, I think. I think somebody needs a hug. I mean, Snowflake, you know, snowflakes need hugs too. But second of all, would a shitty podcast, you know, hey, we've made what, like $1.35 on this thing so far? I think we've made, but that's $1.35 more than Paul's made. So, and to top it off, I don't live in my mother's attic. I don't live in her basement. I live in the attic. Get it right.
Get it right.
Brad, now this ain't everybody on the show is a hometown homer. So do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, he says this is the perfect example. So that's like a backhanded compliment. I'm going to say thank you to that. He says we're all a bunch of New England homers. I don't have a New England accent. Like, when I listen to the playback, I talk slow as shit. Like, I'm half fucking retarded.
So,
he's right about the short bus thing, at least for me. Like, I'm not mad at that. But he said we couldn't get laid in a whorehouse. I'm like, don't disrespect your mother, Paul. She's a classy lady. How dare you? I could get laid in a whorehouse. Your mom is free.
As far as everybody being living in their mother's basement, I believe everybody on the panel is married, or some of us married multiple times. Some people have some illegitimates running around. Some people have, you know, like a little house on the prairie kind of style at their house, not mentioning any names. But Ed, come on, as far as the whole email, don't you think it's a little ridiculous?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm just going to say this is that, you know, I'm the guy on the couch. I mean, it just so happens that it is in a luxury apartment. All 790 square feet of it, okay? And just so you know, I have this wonderful color. It's called Divorce Yellow. It's on the walls. You know, I mean, anybody that's been through a divorce knows that there's a color called Divorce Yellow. It's great. You know, highly recommend.
It's the one that comes standard with the sheetrock.
That it does. How about that? So, like, the thing about it is, it's like, Paul, I mean, you know, we'd love to have you on. I mean, reach out for us. I mean, come on. You know, you can sit there and bang away on the keyboard. Well, come on with us. And, you know, maybe you can learn us, you know, short bus people on how to do a better podcast. So, you know, I'm going kind of light on you, Paul. Just, you know, I don't have kind of the energy. You know, I'm feeling a bit under the weather. You know, I'm allergic to the hair. you know, the hair is right now is not so good. So, you know, and I resemble the fact that I do live on a couch. So, but I do have a Tempur-Pedic that I do sleep on. And yeah, I live in, you know, 760 square feet of luxury apartment. So thank you. Good day, sir.
Dennis, quick good response day, to that email.
Whew. I mean, I don't get the opportunity to get on the pod that much, but man, Paul's going hard in the paint. Yes, I did grow up in New England, my first 26 years, but I've spent the last 25 in Chicago, enjoying, have a family, have a wife, have a lot of kids. Definitely not living in my mom's basement. So
but your Paul mom does have a nice basement, Dennis.
My mom does have a very nice basement.
That's a nice basement.
Tunnels and stuff. It's pretty wild. That was my grandmother's house, the other one. Yeah, had some sweet vintage liqueurs that used to be sampled in there that were probably like 25, 30 years old. But
that's a nice basement.
And the red carpet and the red carpet was always big. So, but basically, Paul can eat my bag. Okay.
Just the one of them. Just one.
Yeah. I got to save the other one.
Yeah. So one bag for Paul. And we're going to say, if you got any more to say, send another email. Over.
Bring it on the pod. Bring them on.
Bring pod on the
Paul have on the pod. Stack.
Thanks for watching, Paul.
Yeah. Thank you.
Paul, send it. We'll send you a link, buddy. You can come on and you can learn us all about, you know, short bus kids, man. Yeah. Come on now.
We'll even give you a helmet.
I guess that AP history class that I took back
in the day. Helmet.
Yeah. We got a helmet for you.
Hey, I have special ed sometimes. Boom.
Speaking of emails, speaking of chirping on social media, the Phantom's been heavy the last 2 weeks, sending cryptic videos to the group that I brought Dennis on the show to kind of respond to what he maybe or maybe not have appreciated right after his son was on with a great interview. The Phantom was very proud in Dennis's progress, in his journey into weight loss. Very inspiring. So he sent a very inspiring video. And Dennis, you want to take it away?
Yeah. So needless to say, when I was watching the podcast, that was the last thing I expected to see. I was flattered. Yeah, he had a good photo. I was in Mohawk mode then. I had the earbuds in, the whole nine yards. Had the wife beater on, setting PRs, lifting cones. All right. What I don't understand is how that lowlife got access to my private gym. So I got to figure that out and put a stop to that. But I got a big laugh out of it, and I pray to God that my son does not see that.
Too late. So speaking of the Phantom, I know Chris, I know Brad saw this week's video that he sent in that I'm going to drop in probably right at this spot. But Brad, any quick responses to the Phantom from the video of a comment that you made on the show a couple weeks ago? Here's your chance to cut a promo.
Look, I never said I partake or particularly enjoy cocaine. It is a recreational drug. I stand by it today. I don't think people should lose their jobs over cocaine. So Phantom, go make a video, buddy. It was hilarious.
It was very well done, I must say.
Got Kendall from Succession over here.
The funny thing is when I go back and I look at editing and doing different things, if you look at a lot of the captions on our old episodes, almost every caption, we're laughing in the picture that's used by either YouTube or, you know, with the social media posts, we're laughing almost all the time, big smiles, cracking up. So I think at the end of the day, I think that's basically what the premise of the whole podcast is, not only entertaining ourselves, but hopefully we can, you know, not take any subject too serious that we talk about, but shed light on some stuff and have some Gen X perspective. So You know, that's all I hope for when it comes to that. And I think a lot of people don't understand that the audio podcast, you're not going to get all the little clips and the little drop-ins and everything that we do with that. That's basically just for, you know, listening through Apple or Spotify, right, Tom? Pretty much, you're going to get the bonus stuff with watching the YouTube video itself that gets dropped first. So, speaking of Thomas, Tom, it's time for your segment. It's time for Tom Shitty Picks. Let's do it.
Buy the shirt. Right. Stop being so cheap.
Stop being cheap.
Tom Shitty Picks is brought to you by Brock Street Brewing Company, located at 244 Brock Street South in Whitby, Ontario. The brewery is home to a banquet hall, an on-site restaurant, and a members-only lounge. Everything they brew is done in-house, including the sours, lagers, and their vodka sodas. They've got something for everyone, so if you're in Whitby, go by and check them out. Tell them the 1973 podcast sent you. All right.
So do they give you a members-only jacket to wear there?
Hey, you got to talk to Scotty next time we have him on the podcast.
I'd like to know. I mean, I like the maroon one, not going to lie.
Yeah, so, Scotty, I'm going to do some marketing for you. If you're going to make some new gear, make a members-only jacket with the Brock Street Brewery logo on it. So I just made you money. So send one for Ed.
All right. I'd love it. I'd wear it every night. Maroon, please.
So this past week, it was a layup. I took Connor McDavid. He had 5 points. He had a goal and 4 assists. He was a +4. He had 16 shots. So if depending on what type of pool you're in, you get points for shots. And so you would have got at least like 20 points, I think, from him this past week. So this coming week, I'm going a little bit different. I'm going to go with a goalie. I'm going to go with Igor Shesterkin of the Rangers. They've got 4 games coming up this week against the Devils, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Pittsburgh. The Devils and Pitt kind of seem to be fading fast. Tampa Bay is hit or miss. Carolina, I think, will be a shootout. But Shesterkin, he's got 26 wins on the year. He's got a 2.67 goals against average. And in his last 4 games, his goals against average is 1.98. So I think he's kind of hitting on all cylinders right now before the playoffs. He's just coming around at the right time.
So let's talk a little trade deadline while we're on the hockey subject. And, you know, it's getting to be that time. We've been putting it off for long enough. Time to start talking some puck going into the Stanley Cup run. So, Thomas, big winners at the trade deadline. Vegas doing their bullshit with the IR moves.
Vegas and Colorado. Colorado, yeah. Getting Sean Walker, Casey Mittelstadt, Yakov Trenin, and Brendan Duhaime to protect all the guys on the ice. I think Colorado, which, interestingly enough, I heard that they also had a deal worked out with the Bruins for Ullmark, and Ullmark vetoed it. So that would have been
to the Kings, though, I heard, too, right?
What's that?
I heard Ullmark to the Kings, too, and he turned that down.
Yeah, he didn't want to go to the West Coast.
Oh, well, sucks to be him.
I think that Florida nailed it with Tarasenko and who's the other? Oh, Kyle Okpozo. I think they nailed it. They're going to be tough to beat. If Bobrovsky can play just normal hockey and not, like, totally shit his pants, I think they're going to be tough to beat in the playoffs. But Vegas, of course, they do it every year where they kind of work the salary cap, which if it's technically not illegal, so what the hell, they can do it. Anyone can do it. I mean, Tampa Bay did it with Kucherov, but getting Thomas Hertl and, of course, Noah Hanifin, I mean, that's just going to help them out tremendously.
So biggest winner in your go ahead.
My biggest winner, I think, is Florida, I thought. Getting Tarasenko, I mean, he had 2 goals today, his first game. So I just think adding another scorer on that line where they can move everybody down a line, I just think it's going to work perfectly for them.
Yeah, a little bit of I felt that we were texting a couple of trades back and forth on Friday, and I thought the Anaheim Ducks were dog shit. That's just total crap. Organization right now, just letting Drysdale go to America's team, and then all the other stuff that they've done, and they kind of left just with Trevor Zegras and Gibson, and basically that's it, and Carlson, you know, that. So we'll see what happens, and we won't spend too much time on that because it, you know, We got other important things to talk about. You got anything to add before we move on?
One other thing that I think is hilarious is the Bruins trade, getting Pat Maroon after America's favorite broadcaster, Jack Edwards, came out last year and fat shamed him on the air. And then he had to apologize to him the next time. And Maroon wouldn't even look up at him when he went to the locker room to talk to him, to now that they're on the same team. It's just funny how things work out.
Yep. Crazy. Any chance of Lucic coming back to the team now that the charges have been dropped, or you think he's
not off? Not a chance. I don't think they would have gotten Maroon if Lucic was coming back, because they pretty much the same. They're out there for the same reason. They're going to be out there to protect McAvoy, Marchand, Pasternak.
So, that's all little stories within stories as we move on into the springtime Stanley Cup run. Let's talk some wrestling. Let's get into some Dark Side of the Ring episode one. Now, my childhood buddy, most like Ed was, we watched a lot of NWA growing up, got removed from it, got him to watch the first episode of the Dark Side of the Ring. My buddy, Dennis Rose. Dennis, Earthquake, what'd you think?
Man, like I told you, when you texted me about the topics that we're going to be discussing, I was like, shit, man, I haven't watched wrestling since I was a kid. But I was very intrigued by this series. I even started watching episode two. I saw Jim Cornette and I'm like, whoa, let me see what's going on. And I do remember Earthquake. I do remember him being a heel. I loved that tag team, the Natural Disasters. It just brought back a lot of good memories. I liked how the backstory, they talked about how he was a wrestler at LSU, ended up going to Japan, getting involved in sumo, then got his chance like at a, he was a plant in one of the matches when they were the Ultimate Warrior and somebody else were doing like a push-up contest, and he got called out of the crowd. And that was kind of his introduction into professional wrestling. So all those little backstory things are really interesting to me. It was really cool to see all that. And then it kind of like has a chronological effect of, you know, his life through wrestling, the trials, the tribulations, how he kind of got cast it aside. They like these professional athletes get, you know, used up, chewed up, and once they don't add value anymore, they get spit out, kicked to the curb, and you kind of see what he went through at the end of his life. So I mean, it got pretty sad there at the end, but it was a very interesting watch for me.
So before we get into it, if you haven't watched any of the other seasons, there are some really good episodes in the first couple seasons. I mean, they talk about the Bruiser Brody murder. They talk about the Chris Benoit murder. So if you ever want to go back and actually...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So if you have the streaming service to go back and watch some of the older episodes, very cool. Especially one that you'll love if you get a chance. I think it was last season was the Jimmy Snuka murder cover-up type thing. Kind of a sad story because kind of fell on deaf ears when it happened, kind of swept under the rug, and then what ended up happening after he wrote his book, he put a couple mistakes in the book that didn't jive with the police report, and that's kind of what kind of opened the case again. So if you get a chance, Dennis, go back and watch a couple when you have time. Tom, what'd you think of the first episode?
I thought it was good. I was kind of surprised I didn't mention that he actually was a walk-on. I didn't know this until I read up a little bit more on him. He was a walk-on on the LSU football team also, but he didn't play. I think he only played 2 years, and then he just was more into wrestling and the wrestling there than he was at football. So, I mean, that's where he wanted to concentrate more on. But I like the All Japan aspect where I didn't realize he started there. I thought he had started up in Canada. But he had signed after LSU. He had signed that over in All Japan Pro Wrestling when he was 23 years old. I mean, that's how I don't know if it's still like it is back then, how it was back then. But where the young guys have to carry the older guys' bags, they got to wash them when they're in the showers and stuff. I mean, it's like old school there.
Brad, did you get a chance to watch it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's like Dennis said, there's a lot of brought back a lot of memories of Earthquake, Tugboat, Typhoon, the natural disasters. You know, those were big when I was a kid. I mean, kind of like also like Dennis said, man, it's like that typical athlete story arc. The man got big, he peaked. I think he kind of got screwed over by the WWF at that time. With his storyline, they kind of ran out of space for him, literally and figuratively. You know, he's a big guy. You can only have the big guy win so much, right? We kind of see that same trajectory with any big man in wrestling, whether it's the Big Show, you know, Andre the Giant to an extent, you know, Mark Henry, etc., right? The big man can only win so many, and then it's like, you can't just let him dominate everybody because of his physical size and stature. I appreciate that he was trying to jump, you know, from company to company, looking for stability and income and trying to be a family man. He wasn't the typical wrestler. You know, he spent nights in the hotel room eating a feast of hotel, you know, delicacies, that whatever they could bring him from room service instead of going out partying with the boys, man. Like he was a true family man, it seemed like. And then for the end of his career to be kind of ramrodded by, you know, the creatives in WWF. And yeah, I think I didn't realize back then that he was what's his name with that mask and the little Cartman doll. That was kind of, I was like, what? That was, maybe I forgot. I don't remember, you know what I'm saying? But I was like, holy crap, like that is not a way to go out. Like he never got like a true send off for what he was, you know. And then of course, you know, to pass away with cancer. I mean, it's just very bleak and just kind of sad there. So
Ed, did you end up watching it?
I did.
Thoughts?
How is that Dark Side of the Ring, first of all?
Right. It was more of a biography.
Yeah. It really was.
Yeah.
And so my thing about it is that like there really wasn't a Dark Side of the Ring part of it. I did learn some things about him that I didn't know before. To reiterate the point that Tom had, didn't realize he went to LSU, didn't realize that he played JV football for there, didn't realize that he participated in the LSU wrestling program there. I did think it was pretty interesting how he went over to Japan. He did the sumo wrestler thing for a little bit. I thought it was kind of just like, I feel like the A&E could have done it. They could have done this on A&E and done a biography of him versus the Dark Side of the Ring. I think that there are other stories that Dark Side of the Ring could have handled or somebody else they could have put in his place. I kind of feel like that for myself, I kind of felt like he was much more of a gimmick guy than anything else. Mm-hmm. I never felt like he never quite got the pop that, you know, the Road Warriors would, or Dusty Rhodes would, or Ric Flair, Magnum TA, that type of thing. He can't even touch what Hogan's pop would or anything like that. You know, it is very sad. You know, I don't think that it wasn't a terrible episode by any means of the imagination, but I just don't feel like it was one of those ones where it was like the Chris Benoit one, the Snooker one, or things like that, where the Legion of Doom or how they came up. I just kind of felt like it could have been done in a different way. They could do some sort of a spinoff show about guys that were actually, you know, wrestlers and that type of thing, and do more biographies on Dark Side of the Ring. That's my thought.
Well, next week is Buff Bagwell, so we'll see that, because he's still alive. And if he has input into the story, I always like when they do them when the guys are still alive. I think it kind of takes a little bit from the story when a lot of the key players are passed on. That makes you wonder how much is truth or BS. So, I mean, which one was last year? The Marty Jannetty one. That was that was really good from last year, because he was so outlandish when he was talking about stuff. And you could tell whatever he was talking about, he didn't really care if he, you know, said the wrong thing or whatever, which is great in a story. When you're holding stuff back, it kind of shows, you know, when you're watching an interview. So speaking of Hall of Famers, they released the list of Hall of Famers over the last week. I was telling these guys before we went on the air that I like how they used to do it one a week. That way it would give us something to talk about and we could focus on. First off, when I bring up a name, you're going to tell me Hall of Famer, not a Hall of Famer. And we'll talk about that person and we'll start with Paul Heyman. To me, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Fame manager. They're headlining in Philadelphia this year, so it's a perfect place to put him in. I wonder who's going to induct him. It should be interesting. It'd be great if they had Jim Cornette do it. I'm disappointed that the Midnight Express is still not in the Hall of Fame. But my two cents on Paul Heyman is legit Hall of Fame, one of the best managers of all time in the history of wrestling. I'll go with Ed on this one. Ed, Hall of Famer?
Oh, absolutely, for sure. I mean, I remember seeing him at, the Waltham Armory on the big, gigantic cell phone.
Yeah.
I mean, ECW, man. I remember those back in those days. So he's great on the mic. You see some of the shoot stuff that he puts up on video. He does a great job. He tells some great stories. He definitely, he's one of those guys where he actually enhances the talent that he has. He's had, what, 5 or 6 world champions? I mean, that's what a manager is supposed to do.
I'm going to throw it to you. Greatest manager of all time, yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thomas, Paul Heyman, Hall of Famer?
Oh, without a doubt, 100%. He, from what I heard, they wanted to put him in a couple of years ago, and he said no because he said he still had more to do he wanted to do, and he didn't think he deserved it at that time. But I'm with you. I think the biggest thing is going to be who's going to induct him, because they're not going to have Brock Lesnar because of all his problems. A lot of those ECW guys don't really like him. Tommy Dreamer, maybe, but he actually came out and said he doesn't think he should do it. So I don't think he's been asked. So my guess, I wouldn't be surprised if CM Punk, just being the mouthpiece that he is, and they got to keep him kind of in the spotlight because he's out for a while with an injury again. So I'm going with CM Punk doing the induction ceremony.
Bradford.
100%, question, man.
Is Paul Heyman a Hall of Famer?
100%.
Greatest manager how is he of not? All time?
You greatest manager? Top three.
Yeah,
top
I'm
three.
With you. I'm with you.
I mean, from what he did with ECW, going mainstream and finding a place in the industry, managing, I mean, and a lot of managers tend to kind of manage a few stars, and I feel like they just kind of fade out to, you know, the history books. Paul Heyman found a way to stay relevant and stay in the game. there's a cat. So 100% Paul Heyman. My only beef with how WWE is doing this, though, is, and it's a personal thing, is I don't think people that are still in the spotlight, still doing it actively, should be inducted to Hall of Fame. I feel like that should be reserved for people that are retired from the industry. But I don't know. That's a different podcast.
I forgot to ask Tom, greatest manager of all time, Tom?
No, but he's probably top 5. Yeah. I'm an older guy, so I got some older guys that I put up ahead of him.
Yeah, I think Bobby Heenan's the greatest manager of all time. That's just me. Dennis, I know you haven't watched wrestling in a while, but Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman dangerously.
I had to look on Google on my phone. This was someone from during my hiatus. I had no idea who the hell this guy is, and I look at him, and I still don't know who the hell this guy is.
That's okay. That's why we love you.
That you guys know, so I'm going to say yes.
Right. All right, so here's one. Going to be easy for me. Bull Nakano had a cup of coffee in the WWF. Not that that is a criteria for me being in the WWE Hall of Fame. Abdul the Butcher is in the Hall of Fame. He deserves it. Bull Nakano does not deserve to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. That's my two cents. That's a piece of crap. I don't know why they have to induct a woman every year. If you're not worthy, you should not be in there. Edward, we're going with you. Bull Nakano, in or out?
Absolutely not. And the thing about it is that what about Sherry?
Sherry is in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, sorry, my mistake.
That's all right.
But I mean, like, I read up, I didn't even know who she was.
There you go.
And I mean, like, you know, the thing about it is just like, okay, all right, so Sherry's in. What about Sable? I mean, you know more about Sable than I do about her.
Right.
You know? And yeah, that's not just because she did a Playboy issue either. Right. You know?
Yeah.
Unless she's mad at Brock Lesnar.
Kid show.
Or that, you know.
Kid show, buddy. Jeez. Mama AC is listening.
I'm gonna hit the professor up, Bull Nakano, Tom.
In the WWE Hall of Fame, no. She probably should go in the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame because she was probably, for female wrestlers, she was probably the most famous Japanese wrestler for females. But, and I remember as a kid reading like Pro Wrestling Illustrated and shit. I mean, she was big over there, but she didn't do anything in WWE. And I don't think she belongs in the WWE.
Bradford.
Tom makes a good point. Is the WWE reserved? Is this Hall of Fame reserved for those WWE, WCW, you know, this genre of wrestling?
I don't think so, because you have guys like the Great Muta that are in there, and they never wrestled out one match in WWE, and he's deservedly so. I mean, guys like Giant Baba are in there, right? Yeah. Antonio Inoki, you know, you cream of the crop for Japanese mainstream wrestling guys, not, you know, just Yuji Nagata or somebody like that. Tajiri is not a Hall of Famer, you know, even though he was in the WWE, he's not a Hall of Famer. So go ahead, Brad.
So, I mean, Bull Nakano, never heard of her. Does that mean she shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame? I don't know. I like what Tom said, maybe like a pro wrestling Hall of Fame. But again, I think the WWE Hall of Fame should be reserved to those that had an impact on the WWE, on this particular part of the industry, and they contributed and then retired, or, you know, so I don't think active members of the cast or the roster rather should be inducted either. I don't know. We could do a whole episode on that, but no.
It's an arguing point for new school fans, old school fans. Dennis, I'm going to go with a no, because I know you love women's wrestling, but Bull Nakano is
let's get some of those glow wrestlers in there.
There you go.
That was the stuff right there. That you was know it. Stuff.
12 o'clock. What
was that? That was on at 12:30 a.m., right?
The gorgeous ladies night of wrestling.
Yeah. Lady Godiva.
Yep. Everybody's got their favorite, Hollywood and Vine. That's where it's at. You know it. So next one is, let's go Ming Haku, King Haku, toughest man ever in pro wrestling. The stories are all over the map about I was talking with my close confidant when it comes to wrestling Hall of Fame, the Phantom. Always has great insights on the Hall of Fame. And when it comes to the Samoan Dynasty, I put it that he's a B player. So Haku, to me, is not a Hall of Famer. I'm probably going to get heat for that. I hope he never sees me, because it probably fish hooked my eye out. But I'm going to say no on King Haku, Ming. That's my two cents. Ed, what do you think? Hall of Famer?
I think that they're close. I think that, I mean, those dudes used to be really brutal in the ring, and they used to, I mean, they used to pound some people back in the day. So I don't know, man. I think that's a 50-50 call, and I'm not going to make that call.
Thomas?
Coco Beware's in. King Haku, Ming, whatever the hell you want to call him, he's in. Because if the bird can get in, Haku can get in with, he's won the King of the Ring.
I said this before, the measuring stick is not Coco Beware. The measuring stick is the unpredictable Johnny Rods is in the Hall of Fame. I mean, if that guy was a lifetime jobber, if he is in the Hall of Fame, I don't care what wrestlers he's trained, his on-air performance stunk. Where Johnny Rods is in the Hall of Fame and Ivan Koloff is not in the Hall of Fame and the Midnight Express isn't in the Hall of Fame, we got issues with this. We got issues. It's like Grandmaster Flash being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Iron Maiden not being in the Hall of Fame. That's kind of the argument. Bradford.
Man, what do you think? I mean, you guys took my points here. Like, I think the Hall of Fame needs to be more prestigious. You know, there is a system for the Hall of Fame in literally every other sport and industry where there is a certain level of accolade you have to achieve. And just being present in the sport or just being around for a while or even being successful is not the measurement device to get you in. You know, what did you bring to the table? Did you change the sport? Did you innovate? Were you some, you know, lifetime, you know, achievement of being a champion for an extended period? Or did you win X amount of championships? Like, there has to be a standard. You can't just get the nod because, oh, hey, we got to throw a woman in this year. Oh, hey, we need our diversity person in there. So we're going to pick Coco Beware or, you know, anybody that's a person of color for that matter that they're just trying to check a box. Like, there's got to be some standard that they hold these guys to. So I don't agree with that one either, man.
Dennis, do you remember King Haku?
I do. I Googled him and I actually recognized him.
Okay.
As soon as I saw him. He seemed to be just kind of like a B player.
There you go.
From my experience, and always just ended up he was getting his ass kicked. So for me it's a no.
Okay. All right. That's all we need. So last but not least, and I'm gonna save the professor for the last one on this. The U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo. Now, I know my childhood chum, Dennis Rose, knows who Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo are. I know he knows who they are. But we're going to start with Edward. Edward, the U.S. Express, Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo going in as a tag team. Now, mind you, Barry Windham is already in there as part of the Four Horsemen. So this seems like, go ahead. I'm going to say no. And I'm going to tell you why. Because they were at WrestleMania 1. They beat the Sheik and Volkoff, I believe, for those belts. And that was pretty much it. Go ahead, Ed.
I don't understand. I just don't understand. Now, the thing about it is that were they a good tag team? Yeah. But they were only together for what? A year or two in the WWE? That was it. I mean, they came out to Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. I mean, good for you. I mean, like, you know, like in 1984 and 85, like if you couldn't get a crowd pumped up playing Bruce Springsteen, I mean, come on. Like who would? I mean, come on now. So I'm going to say no. I mean, I think they both were good wrestlers. I think that, you know, were they a great tag team? No, because I don't feel like that they, like, you know, I mean, they didn't blow the doors off the barn at all. I mean, look, I'm sitting on a couch in a luxury apartment, you know, so, I mean, what do I know? But, you know, thanks, Paul, for putting me in my place. But, you know.
And I will say that the thing before we move to other picks on Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo is, the story about Barry Windham with that team is he left that team early and they filled it with Danny Spivey.
Right.
They filled Barry Windham's spot with Dan Spivey on the back end because he couldn't even stay there. Like, I don't know if he got burnt out with the schedule or whatever, or got homesick. So they're putting a tag team in that at the end of it wasn't even really an actual tag team. So do they put Danny Spivey in there too as like the honorable mention? So, Brad, give me your thoughts.
What did they do to innovate the industry? What did they do that was special? If we got to Google to find out what their accolades were and how many championships and how long their run was, then I don't think that's where they have a Hall of Fame. So I say no.
I like the way you think, Bradford. Yeah. Dennis.
Yeah.
Barry Windham, Mike Rotundo, what do you think?
I do remember the U.S. Express. That was right in my sweet spot when I used to actually watch it. All right. Barry Windham's hair alone, Hall of Fame worthy. America, born in the USA. Let's go.
All right. Now to put a pin in this Hall of Fame talk for this week, the professor himself is going to weigh in. He doesn't like to be called this, I, Gordon Solie of this podcast, the professor, put a cap on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. They do not belong. And like Barry Windham's already in with the Horsemen. To me, that right there would disqualify them because you should only go in once. But Mike Rotundo was one of the most boring wrestlers to watch. He was just a plain vanilla guy. Wasn't really great on the mic. I think he's getting in because he's Bray Wyatt's dad, and it's like more of a sympathy thing because Bray died this past year. And don't get me wrong, I've heard nothing but good things with what WWE is doing for Bray Wyatt's family. And so that in itself is good, but he doesn't belong. It's just, to me, this is all about giving them a feel-good ending and having Bray Wyatt's dad go in.
So we could probably say that when we talk about who gets picked for the Hall of Fame, there might be a little conspiracy in there. You think? Maybe? Trying to do a segue here, because guess what? We got a couple emails. We got a couple comments. Our pal, the man from the South, our new best friend and little buddy, Bradford, has got his own spot on the show, his own segment. It's called Brad's Tinfoil Hat. Brad, what do you got this week? What's this week's topic? What are we going to talk about?
First of all, Paul from Oswego, acknowledge me before I say another word. So I hope I don't run off any one of our 180 or so viewers. But this week's conspiracy theory is the time travel paradox. What is that? Great question, fellas. There's a bug flying around in here. I'm sorry if y'all see that. The time travel paradox. So ironically enough, I asked an AI search bot to give me my info on this. So hopefully we're not all getting played by the, artificial intelligence. Ancient astronaut theory suggests that our ancient civilizations and cultures were visited by somebody. Could be aliens. We don't know. There could is a lot of
illegal aliens.
Undocumented travelers from space. That's what the official term is. So if you look at the Egyptian pyramids, they are literally 1 degree off the way they are built, the way they're oriented, less than a degree off from Orion's belt, the constellation. Pretty amazing for ancient people who didn't really know what the heck was going on back then. The Egyptians also had a primitive flashlight built. Did y'all know that? Very smart people. We have the stone statues of Easter Island, the Nazca lines in Peru, Puma Punku in Bolivia, where it appears these blocks were laser carved, right? Stuff that just could not have been done, or at least the way we think, by ancient people. So there's a lot of evidence to support that some, travelers from the cosmos came down and showed these people how to do stuff. Glyphs, cave paintings, carvings of aircraft, these apparatuses, these humanoid figures wearing these huge helmets with breathing tubes, kind of look like astronauts, if we're being honest, right? That looks like they're in space shuttles. A lot of ancient cultures depict big bright lights descending from the heavens, whether it be angels. Every culture has a different way of explaining it. Christians said it was angels coming down with the sounds of trumpets. Hey, that sounds a lot like people just trying to explain a rocket ship landing, if you ask me. Chariots of fire whisking biblical figures, and in the ancient Romans and the ancient Greeks said, chariots of fire would carry people away. The ancient Chinese said that these dragons would come down from the heavens and take their emperors off, fire breathing and blowing fire, where it kind of sounds like ancient people describing a rocket ship, So there's all these like little hints and clues of something coming down, visiting, these bright lights, loud trumpets, fire breathing apparatuses, something on the lines of like, a rocket ship. So we're trying to figure that out. So the time travel paradox is that, hang in there, that it wasn't actually aliens coming to visit us, that it was us. Hundreds of thousands of years in the future have perfected time travel, and that we're coming back in time to these canon events in our history, which, you know, if you've been watching Marvel and all this other stuff, kind of brings up predictive programming, aka The Simpsons, you know, all the stuff we see in television and movies. So if you've been watching Marvel, these time travel timelines, multiverse movies, they explain it really well, how they have these canon events that have to happen. So we're the ones traveling into the past. We're dropping Adam and Eve in. We're coming in. We're doing Cain and Abel. We're doing the flood. The flood, by the way, is talked about in a lot of different cultures. That's just not in the Bible. That's in a lot of different cultures and religions. Talks about the great flood. They're coming back. They're dropping all these canonized events. It's actually called the Hoover hypothesis. And it's just saying that, you know, humans from a distant future come back in time travel. Now, here is the interesting coincidence. There is a symbol found in ancient time. It is basically a snake or a serpent eating its tail. It's an infinite circle where the snake ends, it begins, goes on and on. It's called the Ouroboros. That is the internationally recognized symbol for time travel. It is, that symbol is found, again, across the board from the Egyptians to the Babylonians to the Romans, the Greeks, you name it. It is everywhere throughout time. So there is my time travel paradox conspiracy theory. I'm not saying I believe it, but if I get you to go look it up and you read up on it, then, you know, join me in my tinfoil hat club. Now we can be friends.
Welcome to Ancient Aliens with Brad.
Yes.
Yep, ancient astronaut time travelers with Brad.
So
I mean, dude, you covered about three seasons of Ancient Aliens with that.
Yeah. Not only watched one season.
It was like the compressed version of it.
Yeah. I didn't even get into that. Fast forward. Yet. Yeah.
Your first member of the fan club, the professor. Would you care to weigh in on that, Thomas?
Not a chance. I'm not touching that. He's been on the AI thing. He's already on the CIA and all that list now. I'm staying as far away from that as I can.
Yeah, I'm on the list.
The list, buddy.
That's the cocaine talking.
Yeah,
that's the cocaine.
Brad, I'm with you. I love the conspiracy talk. We're gonna pick a subject every week, and hopefully we can get some traction with this and talking about it. One of the shows I was trying to turn Brad onto this week was my show. I've been watching since season one, episode one, The Curse of Oak Island. I don't know if anybody else watches
that. They're never going to find that shit. All they're doing is wasting all their fucking money.
The funny thing about it is that the show's been on since our parents have been on.
Yeah, it was Nova Scotia. Yeah, it's never, they're never going to find it. Just give up already and save your money, bro.
So a funny story about that. I worked with a guy that they went up to Nova Scotia, him and his wife, this past summer, and they tried to get to the island. And as they're driving there, they're saying it looks so much like New England as you're going. And then when you get finally there, the causeway is blocked by heavy security, and you can't even get near the island at all when they're filming. So pretty cool. The conspiracy theories, there's a ton of them to talk about. I don't know about the time travel stuff. It's very open to scrutiny along with other, when you believe in one, it almost seems like something else cancels it out. And then if you believe in something else cancels that out. So it's crazy, but very, very fun to talk about. And we'll get some deep dives going forward into that. So getting ready to wrap this episode up. But before that, we're going to do our album of the week. Thomas, take us in.
All right. This week's album of the week is brought to you by Purchase Street Records, which is located at 53 Pope's Island, Unit 2, New Bedford, Mass. You can also visit them online at PurchaseSTRecords.com or on their Facebook page. Purchase Street Records is Southern New England's largest independent record store. And on a side note, our good friend Roger, the owner of Purchase Street Records, he has his band All Sinners, and they're opening up for Ace Frehley coming up in a couple weeks in Woonsocket, sure. Rhode Island. So I don't know how many tickets are left. I know it's pretty scarce right now, so you better get on that if you want to go see it.
Yeah, last time, that's how we got Roger on the show. Last time Ace Frehley came around, I took my son. It's a great time. If you're a Kiss fan like myself, if Ace Frehley comes around and it's decent money to go, it's really cheap, go see him. He's been doing the circuit now, jumping in on all the Kiss fans that don't have any Kiss anymore to go to. Good live. Plus, I had heard, too, that Gene Simmons is going to be doing his solo tour again, which is great. They use the same guys in the same band, and they kind of go back and forth with it. So, yep, everything is good in Kiss World when it comes to that stuff. So we're going to do a couple shout-outs, do once around the table, and we're going to wrap this fun show up. Dennis, shout-out this week. You got anybody you want to mention? Guys down at work, family, friends?
Hell, yeah. Shout out to all my colleagues at Amazon RFD4 in Huntley, Illinois. Stacking and packing. Let's go.
Ed, you got anything this week?
I do have a couple things. First and foremost, I'd like to just remind everybody that 37 years ago, yesterday, License to Ill was the number one album in the country. Okay. Number two, in memorial of... Eddie?
You're gonna tell the story. If you're gonna show that, you're gonna tell a story.
We went up. It was the Phantom's bachelor party. We went up to St. Catherine Street, and we had a wonderful time. And I believe that we went and saw a hockey game.
That's all you remember.
Yeah, best day ever. So,
Bradford, what do you got?
I just want to shout out the icon, Sting. Great farewell retirement match. Went out on top. He tried not to. He tried to lose it. They told him, hell no, buddy. You're too much of a legend. You are going to take these tag team titles with you. His sons walked out with him in full Surfer Sting and NWO Wolfpack Sting. Get up. They got in the ring. The sons were doing stuff. Sting was doing stuff. It was amazing. Glad that I kept myself awake long enough to watch it. An incredible match, man. If you haven't watched it, go back and watch it on YouTube if you can find it. It was incredible.
Thomas, what do you got this week?
I don't really have any shout-outs, but I want to wish my wife a happy birthday. It's coming up this week in the middle of the week. So happy birthday, babe.
Well, you better tell your wife happy birthday.
Every day.
Every day.
Yeah, you better make sure you get her a card, too.
Mr. Rose has his hand up.
Yeah, sorry. Like, yeah, I totally forgot. I totally spaced out. So I want to shout out my nephew, Ryan Ignafo. He's actually a Major League Baseball player in the minor league system for the Miami Marlins. This is his, any CBL, forget it. He played in the Cape Cod League, and that was his All-Star jersey.
Whoa. That's really cool,
a couple years ago, and he's actually going to be backing up a major league spring training game at catcher this upcoming week for the Miami Marlins. So shout out to my boy Ryan.
That's awesome, man.
Super proud of him.
Yeah. We'll have to have him on the show. They have to work on that, Dennis.
I can probably make that happen if you'd like to talk to a big league ball player.
There we go. And we'll have to bring our heavy hitters, our baseball bunch for that, and without Pete Rose. And we're just, as we do what we do, no shout outs from me this week other than to say to these guys that as, the first year is in the books, things are looking up, we're almost there, we got new people writing in, we got new emails, we got probably new stuff coming down the pipe, so it's going to be a big year. I can feel it. I know we're going to do some really big things this year, so I want to thank all these guys and Chris at home. And I appreciate even videos from the Phantom. Send them in. Keep chirping the podcast. You never know what's going to happen. So from our family to your family, thanks for watching. And we're out. Later, fellas.